The hunter with the long grey beard sat Miranda in front of him on his horse, so I did not mind running uphill with the rope tied around my neck for several hours. Each moment I stayed alive was a gift from God. He had performed a miracle. I was going to take Luca's place. As I have written, I often went to Corsoli for market, but this time I saw things I had not noticed before or did not remember. The huge grey stone wall of the West Gate, the houses huddled together along the streets, winding their way to the top of the city, the sound of horses' hooves ringing on the cobblestones. We rode through the Piazza Verdura with its splashing fountain, through the Piazza San Giulio and more winding streets, and then up the weeping steps to the Palazzo Fizzi. The palace stood on our right, and, facing us across the piazza, the Duomo Santa Caterina, with its beautiful golden Madonna above the door, to whom I whispered a prayer for Miranda's safety. From the outside, the Palazzo Fizzi looked like a castle, but the inner courtyard was lined on three sides with columns and arches. That is, what little I could see of it. It was as if the usual market had been moved inside. There was food everywhere, more food than I'd ever seen in my whole life. Here, women were tending to bubbling cauldrons and roasting spits. Over there, young girls sorted baskets of fruit and vegetables, and in the middle, a group of men were carving up animal carcasses. "What saint's day is this?" I asked a hunter. He said, "San Michele and the Duke's birthday," and then cuffed me on the head for not knowing. "Potta! How was I supposed to know? There have been so many new saints in the past few years, I did not even know there was a San Michele." We had just reached the stables when two soldiers dragged a man in front of Duke Federico. "Did he confess?" the Duke roared. The soldiers nodded, but the man sobbed, "Your Excellency, it is not so." The Duke swung down from his horse and told the man to stick out his tongue. The courtyard had become silent, and glancing about me, I saw that every window had filled with faces. The man slowly, timidly stuck out his tongue. Duke Federico gripped it in his left hand, pulled his dagger with his right, sliced it off, and threw it to Nero. Blood shot out of the man's mouth and onto Duke Federico's boots. He turned to the other hunters. "First he lies to me, then he bloodies my boots!" The man wailed piteously, his hands reaching to Nero, who, having eaten his tongue, was now busily lapping up his blood. Federico kicked the man. "Be quiet!" he yelled, and walked away. But the man could not be quiet. As if they sympathized with his sorrow, the cauldrons, the spits, the prancing horses, and the barking dogs all stilled, so that his cries bounced off them and off the walls of the palazzo. Federico stopped, his back to the man. I muttered, "Please, God, make him be still." But the man's good sense was captive to his terror. Tears streamed down his face. Blood poured from his mouth, and agonized sobs continued to burst from his lips. Federico pulled his sword, and without looking, whirled about and stabbed the man through the back so that the point of his sword went right through his heart and came out blood red on the other side. All the hunters applauded. I felt Miranda's body stiffen, and I pressed her face into me so she would not scream. A curly-haired youth, who, I had noticed, was staring at her, nodded his head, as if to say I had acted wisely. Duke Federico pulled his sword from the man's back, wiped it on his body, and strode into the palace. The same soldiers who had brought the man out now dragged his body to the wall at the back of the courtyard and threw it down to the valley below. I could feel it bouncing off the cliffs, hear the bones crunching on its way to the bottom. In another moment, the servants were back at work as if nothing had happened, but as we entered the palace, I felt a great wind of hatred snap at the back of my neck. Miranda and I were locked in a tower on the other side of the palace. The cell had iron doors, a tiny window near the ceiling, and a few wisps of soiled straw. "Where are we, Babbo?" Miranda whispered. She was still trembling from what she had seen. "In Duke Federico's palace." "But this is not a palace."
"That is because they are preparing a grand room with beds and servants for each of us.
I said as gaily as I could.
But why?
Why? Because I am to take Lucas' place. Did you not hear the man?
She thought for a moment and then said, But who is Luca?
I did not know, and when I did not answer, I feared she would start weeping. I gathered her to me, and looking in those soft, dark eyes, I promised her that God had not made us only to abandon us. I told her to recite all the prayers she had been taught, and while she did that, I asked God if perhaps he had not mistaken us for someone else, and that if he had, could he not correct his mistake before it was too late? Eventually, we ran out of prayers, and so we huddled together in a corner of the cell and became so still that all I could hear was the beating of our hearts, and at one moment, I swear, they stopped too. Please, I begged the guards when they came to take me away, do not leave my daughter alone here. A guard said, We will do whatever we want. But the captain, who had a good heart, said, I have a daughter too. I will take her upstairs. I was led to a room with a large tub of sweet-smelling water and told to scrub myself and wash my hair. The curly-haired youth passed by, carrying a basket of apples. Hey! I called out. Where's Luca? But he ignored me. The grey-bearded hunter looked in and said to the servants, Make sure its hands are clean. The stupid idiot scrubbed my hands till they were raw and would have drawn blood had I not threatened to pull them into the tub with me. I was dried off and my hair brushed. Then I was shaved and given a pair of red hose, a white shirt, a jerkin, and a pair of shoes. When I had dressed, the servants held a mirror in front of me. He does not recognize himself, they laughed. They were almost right. I recognized myself not because I knew what I looked like, but because I looked so much like my mother. My hair was straight like hers. I had her almond eyes, the left one slightly larger than the right. I do not remember what my nostrils looked like. Miranda says they're fleshy, but only my mother could have known if they were that way when I was born, or if they became that way because of what I do. And yet, I was not that different from the men around me, thinner, certainly, but no bigger or smaller. And so from appearances only, I did not know why I had been allowed to take Luca's place. "Whose clothes are these?" I asked. "Luca's," the servants replied, and told me angrily I had no business asking questions. Except for the shoes, which fit me perfectly, Luca was bigger than me in every way. I was lost in his jerkin. The sleeves of the shirt were too long, and so were the hose. Despite this, I was pleased. It was still better than my shift. A guard took me to Miranda, who was now in a pleasant room overlooking a garden of flowers.
Babbo, she gasped, you look like a prince.
This Luca must have been somebody, I said. Who knows? Perhaps he has a daughter. Then you will get some new clothes, too.